not using one's best efforts to win a match. Few Americans know much about the sport of badminton, but that rule will likely be the subject of a lot of discussion over the next few days. Today, badminton officials at the London Olympics disqualified 8 players for tanking. Women's doubles teams from South Korea, Indonesia, and China drew boos yesterday when it looked like they deliberately lost preliminary matches to engineer more congenial matchups later in the tournament. So tell us, is this sickening or is this strategy? Where's the line between gamesmanship and cheating? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Howard Berkus and Tom Goldman are covering the Olympic Games for NPR. They join us now from London. And gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Hey there, Neil.
Hey, Neil.
And let's start with Howard. First off, how bad did this look?
Well, a badminton shuttlecock can move at like close to 200 miles an hour. And these were little, you know, taps and hitting it purposely out of bounds. And it looked pretty bad. And the people in the stands, they knew it right away. They booed, they hissed, they hollered, they shouted. Even the official at one of these matches went over and warned the players to be more serious, which they were for a while. It was quite obvious that this was not Olympic badminton. This might have been closer to the kind of backyard badminton that Tom and I have engaged in occasionally.
I wondered what you guys did in your downtime there in London.
That's about 50 miles an hour we hit the shuttlecock.
In the meantime, Tom, the purpose of this, they're in these preliminary pools, and they were trying to figure out ways. I gather the Chinese were trying to figure out a way to avoid playing each other.
Given the chance to cheat, people will. And it seems that this new format, which goes back to the initial format of Olympic badminton in 1992, to have this pool in which you can jockey to then get a better position in the so-called knockout round, it created the situation. That's where people are laying the blame. It used to be after the first year of badminton when they had it this way, then they went to a knockout round. And when it's a knockout round, people don't want to be knocked out, so they win, and there's not this problem.
And I've read more about badminton today, I think, than I have in my entire life. I gather, Howard, that this is not unknown in international competition, particularly when you have multiple teams from China that they don't want to play each other. And this sport, it's a backyard game in America. It's a big deal in East Asia.
This is what I've been hearing from reporters who cover badminton more regularly, is that this has been a problem since they reintroduced this way of elimination of this system that they've just started. And this is the first Olympics that's had this system. And I think that people weren't prepared for this sort of strategic, if you want to call it, play. Certainly the spectators here weren't. And it was a big shock to the International Olympic Committee when they saw this happen, and the London Organizing Committee, and the Badminton Federation was embarrassed by this type of play at the Olympics. Because, you know, the idea here is that there are people who, they train their entire sporting lives to get to the Olympics, and then they're supposed to, you know, compete and compete hard. That's one of the big selling points of the Games. So when you have people kind of slacking off, it doesn't look good, no matter how strategic it might be. And I have to say, there is a rule that says, the Badminton Federation is very specific. There is a rule that says you have to use your best effort. And it was citing that rule that caused the disqualification of these players, as well as conducting themselves in a manner that is clearly abusive or detrimental to the sport, to quote what the Badminton Federation said today.
And South Korea, though, protested. Their protest was promptly rejected. The Chinese, though, issued an interesting statement.
The Chinese, right, the Chinese Olympic Committee disowned this kind of behavior very quickly and accepted the ruling of the Badminton Federation.
And Neil, here's an interesting quote that may shed a little more light on that, why they accepted that. This is from the Indonesian Olympic team leader, quoted as accusing Chinese players of losing on purpose in the past. He said, China has been doing this so many times, and they never get sanctioned by the BWF, the Badminton World Federation. So it seems to me that they kind of know what's up.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation, because there's a bigger question. Is this, well, gamesmanship, just to work yourself into a better position later in the tournament because you're not tanking the tournament, you're just tanking one game? Or is this, cheating your opponents, cheating the viewers, cheating the game in some way? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Ben's on the line from Greenville in North Carolina.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm a high school teacher, and I run a chess club, and whenever our chess team plays in tournaments, there is a stated rule in most every tournament that players from the same school in a team event will not face each other unless absolutely necessary. I find it interesting that, you know, the two Chinese teams would have faced up against each other so early in the tournament. That seems a bit of a flaw. And then I also have a question. Is there any provision in Olympic rules for a competitor to forfeit a match without stepping out of the competition altogether? Because if any of these teams had forfeited for whatever reason to accept, you know, a single loss without actually playing and intentionally tanking, I have a feeling there would have been a different reaction.
Howard, I'm not sure there's any provision. They would be the badminton rules, not the Olympic rules, but yeah.
Right. They would be badminton rules because the Federation controls what happens with the sport even at the Olympics. I haven't read the rules that carefully, so I don't know. I would suspect that because it's the Olympics, you can't just forfeit and then leave. Then expect to stay in. For most sports that I'm aware of, if you forfeit, you're out, you're gone. And I would suspect that's the case. As for the notion of competing against people from your own country, in most sports at the Olympics, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, you qualify for the Olympics based on your performance before the games. You meet a qualifying standard of some sort. And there's a limit to how many athletes can compete from any particular country. But if only one athlete, if a lesser number qualifies, then you have fewer people. And if more than one qualifies, then, you know, you might have two or three.
Well, as we learned, two female gymnasts from the United States, but only two, not the third one who would have otherwise qualified.
And in swimming, you know, only so many American swimmers would be able to swim in a certain event. But it's based on their qualifying time. So you have American swimmers swimming against each other. And actually, they take it very seriously. They're very competitive. Ryan Lochte and Michael Phelps, they drive each other to do better. One of them doesn't hold back so that the other one might do better. And in no case am I aware of would somebody be able to sort of lose and benefit from that.
And, Tom, I think the analogy that a lot of people might come to is, what about the Williams sisters?
That's true, and they have played each other before, and they talk about how painful it is. But I think when the games begin, they're out there trying to beat each other. So I think, you know, athletes learn that you make that separation between. The Williams sisters, that's an extreme example. You know, you've got athletes on the same team who are not as close as sisters, but they realize this is part of it. And if we're both going to try and win, we're going to like each other off the field of play, but not on the field of play.
Let's go next to Aaron. Aaron on the line with us from San Francisco.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I guess I don't know much about badminton. But I would like to say that I think the punishment that was meted out to these athletes, as I understand it, I feel like it's very justified, and I think it's a great message. It reminds me, I grew up playing basketball all the way through high school and college, and this brought back vivid memories of a locker room conversation where a bunch of my teammates and I were kind of, you know, in an analogous situation where we were in like a, you know, coming toward the end of the regular season, and we're assured of a spot in our, you know, upcoming championship tournament, but the result of our last couple of games would dictate our seeding and who we played and, you know, all mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And basically we were talking about, well, you know, maybe if we lose this game, then we won't have to play so-and-so, and we'll kind of have an easier path to the semifinals and whatever. And I guess the coach heard us and really, like, burst in, like, clearly spur-of-the-moment anger, and lectured us about the nature of competition. I remember he called us all a bunch of cowards. And, that, you know, it felt bad at the time, but I get it now. And I remember him saying, I don't know word for word, but basically saying, what you're doing is admitting that you don't think you can beat this team, and you're also saying that you assume that you can beat this other team. And that is, it's one is cowardly and the other is arrogant. And I won't have either one of those things on my team.
Wow, good coach.
And it was like, it was one of the best things that ever happened to us, I think.
Gene Hackman played that part?
Yeah, it was maybe similar to that. But it was like he basically said, you guys are fundamentally missing the point of competition. And if you learn nothing else like that, like go out there and try to win every game because that's what you do. And it was wonderful.
It's fabulous call and fabulous story from Aaron. Sadly, at these highest levels, that doesn't always play out. We were just having a discussion here in the NPR group about, you know, if I couldn't go my hardest, I just wouldn't go. And you know, it's very pure and simple, and that's what we like to think of with the Olympics. But you know, there are a lot of other factors involved. There's money. There are great riches in some of these countries for people who win gold medals. So you can see how desperate athletes may want to be to get that gold. I think once you get up to the high levels, unfortunately, I mean, you do. I think most athletes are the way Aaron describes the situation with him. But you get some who aren't.
Aaron, thanks very much for the call.
Oh, thank you.
We're talking with Tom Goldman and with Howard Berkus, two of NPR's correspondents covering the Olympic Games in London. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And this email from Bradley in Portland. We see runners and swimmers let up during preliminary meets. Why is this different?
Because runners and swimmers aren't trying to lose. They're saving their strength. They're competing as much as they need to qualify for that round, but they're not in the realm of deliberately trying to lose. And what these badminton players are doing is they're deliberately trying to lose. I think there's a difference there.
And here, this from Robert, disqualify badminton players for not trying? Trying to do what? If the goal is to win a gold medal, then I would say they were doing their best. It's the Badminton Federation who should be disqualified for gross incompetence.
Well, you know, I think one big question here is, as we said, this is a new rule, a new way of doing it in badminton. And we have heard that this has happened before. So the question is, what kind of enforcement has taken place so far? And was it reasonable for these players to think that this would be something that they could get away with, given what has taken place in other tournaments in which this rule has been in effect? I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's a good one. It may be that the Federation was sort of caught here, having a new rule, it having perhaps been abused before, but not having a crackdown on it before. And with the spotlight of the Olympics, it looks bad. All of a sudden, you know, there's a crackdown.
Let's see. Here's another email. This is from Nick. Mostly it's unsportsmanlike conduct. You always honor your opponent by giving your best. And I think, Tom, that's come up in other contexts. I mean, for example, we had the instance of NBA teams years ago playing to lose, it looked like, at the end of the season, so they would get a better draft pick when that came up. They switched around to get the lottery. There were any number of instances, and not too long ago either, of point shaving in college basketball. And this is where a team, well, we're not playing to lose, we're playing to win by less than 8 points, which is the betting spread, and that would allow gamblers to profit, but these things are hard to judge. Those are clearly crimes, fighters throwing fights. This comes up in a lot of contexts.
It does, yeah. And actually, the NBA thing still goes on. I mean, you have a draft lottery, but people are trying to position themselves to get an even better pick in the draft lottery. It does go on, and you know, I mean, we'd all like to think that, sport is the way we think of it in Chariots of Fire, which is a common theme here at these Olympics, being in London. You know, you hear the theme song mm-hmm. often before the medal ceremonies.
Constantly.
And it's very gentlemanly, gentlemanly amateur athletics and the Olympic ideals, which I think is why that movie is so popular. They just recently re-released it here in Britain, as a matter of fact. So, but the reality is often different.
Let's get one last caller in. Oh, this machine is not there we go. Susie's on the line with us from Columbus.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Neil. I wonder how it's different from a pitcher intentionally walking a great hitter. And I don't think the audience was defrauded. I think they were watching players using their brains to go for the gold medal, which everybody has always told them is the goal. And that if there's a fault, it's the Olympic organizers who did the draw wrong and who are the ones raking in the money who defrauded the audience by not telling them that this is built into the problem. And on Chariots of Fire, you know, it changed the story. Abraham had not won the race going around the university. And so it was a much bigger sacrifice for his friend to give it up to him in real life. And they cut that out of the movie.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for the call. So, Tom, quickly, the analogy of walking Barry Bonds intentionally to get to a lesser hitter.
Well, you know, the pitcher is losing that confrontation, but I go back to what Howard said. They're not losing the game.
All right,
to do that.
And you'll be pleased. I don't think this is the Chariots of Fire theme.
Thank you.
Tom Goldman and Howard Berkus joined us from London, where they're covering the Olympic Games. I expect more on the badminton controversy later today on All Things Considered, so stay tuned for that. Tomorrow, reconsidering violence in entertainment after the Colorado theater shooting. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.